I heard my grandma tell my mama when I was just a girl, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. She said, you gotta do what must be done. Don't just sit around and wait for nobody to come. Hold your head up high. Raise these babies right. Let them know they're loved.
That was a clip of music from our next guest, Kathy McGill. Kathy, welcome to Women's Focus. You are an entertainer, a playwright, a woman with many talents. Now, let's just start by talking about your talents as an entertainer. And when did you start singing and writing songs?
I would say that I started singing as soon as I was able to talk. I grew up singing in the church at the Mount Calvary Baptist Church in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and singing in the Sunshine Band Choir under the direction of Sister Vanya Johnson, who said that we needed to stand up straight, open our mouths, and sing. And so I'd been singing since I was 2. And I've always written songs and always been involved in the performing arts and theater. But I think I probably got really serious about songwriting in the mid-90s, probably. Yeah.
So what was the first song that you remember writing?
It was called Wherever I Am, which was just a chant about some spirituality and feeling like I needed to write about the fact that wherever I am, God is.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Kathy, we don't get to meet very many original songwriters here on the station. At least I don't anyway. And what do you think is some of the inspiration behind the songs that you do write and the songs that you sing?
Oh, life. The clip that you heard when we opened the show was about my mother, who raised 5 kids on a teacher salary. And so I wrote about how great my mother was, and I felt like where she got her inspiration from her mother and the things that she told me about how to succeed in life.
You know what, Kathy? You've been around Albuquerque for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know that people know a lot about you.
So let's
go back and talk a little bit about Kathy. So you're sitting here in the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque, but did you grow up in this city?
I did not. I feel like I came into myself in Albuquerque, but I was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in the teaching hospital there. And my mother said that I was performing from the very first time that I opened my mouth, because it was a teaching hospital and there were a bunch of doctors around learning about how to deliver babies. So she said I had a stage from the very first moment that I was born. And then we grew up in Muskogee, Oklahoma, the place where even squares can have a ball. And I was there for the first 17 years of my life and still have family there.
So when did you actually come to Albuquerque and what brought you here?
I got here in 1984 primarily because I was living in Chicago and it was really, really, really cold. And I had never been that cold. And I decided that I needed to get back to like a warmer climate. And I used to come to Albuquerque every summer when I was growing up and had some relatives here. So I decided to move to Albuquerque because I wasn't quite ready to go back to L.A. where I went to school. And I wasn't quite ready to move to New York. And I thought this would be kind of an interim stop for me on, you know, my imagined other life path.
Well, you know, that's interesting to hear, Kathy, because in the last couple of days, mm-hmm. I've spoken to people who were only coming to Albuquerque for an interim stop.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And many years later, they are still here.
Yeah, 32 for me.
Well, I just want you to know that it's to our favor that you decided to stay rather than going to California or New York.
Thank you.
So when you first came here, was entertaining the first thing that you did? Or what did you do when you first arrived?
I mean, I did connect because performing is a big part of my life. And so I connected with Juba Clayton over at University of New Mexico in the Women's Studies program. And she was doing a play on campus at that time, Lorraine Hansberry's To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. And so I met a bunch of people doing that. And I also went over to It was then called the Albuquerque Civic Light Opera Association, and I was in a couple of their musicals. I think I was in South Pacific and this other show called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, actually. So I was in that play.
That's quite a variety, Kathy.
Yeah.
But you've been engaged in community activities that support sharing information about the rich culture of African Americans in New Mexico for several years. But most notably, Kathy, I can remember that you are the founder of the Black History Organizing Committee.
Correct.
Now, what is that committee and why was it formed?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. I feel like based on my now 32 years of experience here in New Mexico, what I have seen is that Blacks are routinely left out of the political, social, and cultural landscape of the city. And part of it is because of our numbers. We have about 3% of the population statewide. But also part of it is just because New Mexico has been considered to be a tricultural state. And lots of people, long before I got here, have been working on trying to kind of bust up that myth and promote true multiculturalism. And I thought this organization would be a way to help to continue that work of saying that New Mexico is multicultural and that Blacks have made significant contributions to the evolution of the state, and that we're powerfully here and our kids need to be represented, and we need to take our place at those tables politically, culturally, and socially.
So as a part of that, your Black History Organizing Committee, what I have seen and noticed is that long before you did that, there were many, many areas of the city that were trying to celebrate Black History Month, mm-hmm. but there was no coordination. And so how did your committee bring about coordination of all of those activities so people could enjoy a cultural experience in the month of February?
Well, I think that what we did was say to everyone, let us know what you're doing, because there's a lot of great work out there in the city and across the state. And so we just asked people to let us know what you're doing, and more importantly, to come together so that we could leverage our resources and see ourselves in this powerful way, and then help the community to see us as a great contribution to the state.
So now, through your committee's work, I think I've seen some of your amazing plays. So this is mm-hmm. where your talent as a playwright has been shining extremely brightly. So tell us about some of the plays that you have written. Let's start with the first play that I can remember, and you'll have to tell me if that really was your first play, and that was Roots Revival. Was that your first play?
That was the first one that I did here in New Mexico, Roots Revival. Was the first one, and then we just did Roots Revival 2. And I think that, you know, what I really want to say is that the play itself is the product of what we do, but the process is about bringing the community together, having families working together, and then also to be able to preserve our culture and tell our story in a way that will be palatable for people, because there's some interesting parts about the Black experience that sometimes are challenging for people. But we find that the arts have a way of being able to allow people to access the information in a way that invokes civic dialogue. And that's what Roots Revival is about. So yeah, that was the first one that we did. And it was the first year of the production. There's kind of an interesting story about that, because I had wanted to do another production, and I was working with dramatists and adapting this play called Anna Lucasta that I wanted to make into a musical. And I went pretty far down the road and talked to the playwright's widow and talked to the head of dramatist and his secretary who used to live in New Mexico. And then all of a sudden they said in November that they weren't going to give me the rights to do it. So I was like, oh, okay, that's great. Now what? Because we have a show coming up in February as a part of the festival. So I had done a cabaret for UNM, Office of African American Student Services, cultural conference about 5 years earlier in 2008. that I called Roots Revival, and I thought, okay, I'm scrambling to try to figure out something to do. And I thought, okay, we'll do that. I'm going to revive that, but I need to make it into a full play because it was just a cabaret. And I couldn't figure out what to do. And this friend of mine, Shannon Moreau, is a writer in town, a very good writer. And she has been involved in the Black History Organizing Committee since its inception. And so I said, Shannon, you know, I'm really stuck. I need to figure out like how to weave the story together. And she's asked me if I had ever seen The Princess Bride. And I had not. So she explained it to me, and she said that it was about this grandfather who was telling stories to his grandson about their history. And I thought, that's perfect. So I could connect our West African tradition, the griot, to telling these stories about African American history. And there's so many stories to tell that the possibilities are endless. So we're in Roots Revival too, but I can imagine that we could be like, I don't know, what is that Freddy Krueger thing where they have like 15 or 20 of them. So we might make it up to 20. I don't know if I'll do that, but we have many, many stories to tell. And so that framework really worked because it allows us to have a multi-generational cast. It was really important to me to have kids involved, both to train them in the arts, but also to teach them about their culture and to help them with their lives. And I think that the arts have the ability to improve academic achievement. It helps people to be more focused and confident. And so Roots Revival sort of hit a lot of targets for us in terms of bringing the community together, positive youth development, and telling our story in a way that is truthful and powerful, that invokes civic dialogue.
Well, I have seen the way you've developed the talent of the children who were in your plays, and they are absolutely exceptional.
Yes.
So I can just say you have done a really great job in developing the talent of our youth.
Shout out to the Whiz Kids, we call them, because their future's so bright. You know, whenever I get their bios, they're telling me about their hopes and dreams, and it's really just exciting to see them say, I want to go to Juilliard, I'm going to go to Morehouse, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be a lawyer. And we get an opportunity to be gifted with the honor of having some small part even in their ongoing development.
So now you talk about the Whiz Kids. That's a great name for them. But I also remember, Kathy, that you have produced a show called The Whiz.
Yes, and so we did do that.
How did you decide to do that play?
Well, because, you know, as we're looking through the African American catalog of theater that involves a large cast that is multi-generational, we could do that and have the kids. So we were deciding what we're going to do one year, and someone said, well, why don't you try The Whiz? It's a huge show, and it probably, if I had known how huge it was, I might not have done it because it was a lot of work, but it was very gratifying. And we even had the opportunity to have the kids apprentice the principal roles, and they got a chance to perform the entire production with just the youth performers. So we're just out there looking for established work and creating new work.
You know, I'm glad you decided to take on that piece of work. If I remember correctly, was that your play that was at Popejoy Hall?
No, we did Roots at Popejoy Hall. That was back in 2013. And that was really exhilarating to be able to be on the stage. And for some of those kids, it was the first time that they had ever done a public performance. And their very first performance is on the largest stage in the state of New Mexico. So that was pretty exciting for them and for us.
Well, it was an exciting play to watch, and I guess I've just confused myself on where they were performed because they're all so good wherever they are performed.
Oh, thank you. So we try to get around the entire city, and hopefully we'll be back at Popejoy again. That's our hope, is that we'll get an opportunity to go back with another large show.
Now, as a community activist, let's just talk about your role there again for a moment. You've been engaged in a program called ASSETS.
Yes.
Now, what is ASSETS?
ASSETS, the acronym stands for African American Community Economic Transformation Study, which is totally a mouthful, but it is the opportunity for this community to capture the voice of the Black community and figure out who we are, where we are, and where we'd like to be as a community and to celebrate our assets, the ASSETS, as opposed to focusing always on our disparities. And I think it's really a better way to organize the community and to make positive inroads if we focus on our strengths and we play from our strengths. And our strengths in this community are really all of the wonderful people who are doing great work, many of them on a volunteer basis. A lot of people have full-time positions, but they spend so much time in community volunteering to help make the community better. So we wanted to get a snapshot of where everybody is in the state, what they're doing, and then figure out where the gaps are and try to figure out how we might fill in some of those gaps so that we could then eliminate some of those disparities.
So in terms of filling in those gaps and determining where you maybe need to fill in gaps, what do you think you've been able to accomplish so far?
I think we have a really good picture of what exists, of what we need, and we're now trying to figure out how we move forward to create it. I spoke initially about that tricultural focus of New Mexico, and it has manifested in terms of how programs are run and how people access services. And so we want to be a part of not just restating the problem, but determining what a solution is. And we feel like a solution would be for the community to decide how we go about creating new programs that are going to address some of those disparities in a targeted, focused way, as has been done in other communities.
So do you think that there has been more light on the fact that there is a fourth culture in New Mexico as a result of some of the work that you've been doing?
You know, I hope so. And what I always say to people that we're not nationalists. We're not trying to say that we want to exist on some sort of island as the Black community. What we're saying is that we want to promote true multiculturalism, and that is to create a world where it works for everyone all the time. And not just that there are four cultures, but that it is multicultural. And that also we want to sort of go beyond what I think has been trivialized, the term diversity, into more humanism, so that I don't have to be present in order for my interests to be represented. That people just understand that we want to create policies, we want to put programs in place that serve everyone. And that when committees are forming on the government level or in the nonprofit sector, if you look around to see who's not at the table and what voices are not represented, that we don't have to come to you after the fact and say, hey, you know, you forgot about us again, but that they would just know that it's not just a one of each kind of thing, but that we want to make sure that all voices are represented, that youth voices represented, that the Black community is represented. And that I want to make sure that we understand that we're not saying that we're a monolith, that, you know, Kathy McGill does not speak for everybody who's Black, but that we want to make sure that when policies and programs are being created, that we don't have just a homogenous voice in the creation of those programs. And what I say often when I'm talking to people about this is that if I put a room full of 5-year-olds together, they're going to say, hey, Miss Kathy, we need to stay up longer and we need to eat more ice cream. And that's what we're going to get out of it. But if you diversify that room, then you're going to get people saying, well, I think you need to have more vegetables and I think you need to go to bed. I think you need to get an education. And yeah, you can have some ice cream and you can stay up a little later, you know, on the weekend.
That's some good advice, Kathy. And mm-hmm. You are making a great impact on the community. It's very well appreciated.
Thank you.
So as you were growing up, who were your role models?
Oh, definitely my mother, who raised 5 kids on a teacher salary in Oklahoma. And I think at the time when I was growing up, which was 100 years ago, the rate of teachers' pay in Oklahoma was maybe 50. I think maybe Mississippi, we were battling for the bottom position with Mississippi for the rate of teachers' pay. So my mother was raising 5 kids on a teacher salary and trying to make sure that we could have everything that we both wanted and needed. Maybe not everything we wanted, but certainly everything we needed in a lot of the wants. And so when I watched her do that, and I also watched her serve the community, even with her limited financial resources, that she was able to give so much to so many, that was really my example.
Well, Kathy, I want you to know that I appreciate your sharing all of this great information about you today so the people in New Mexico can get to know Kathy McGill just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And as we are continuing to celebrate Black History Month, what are some of the other activities that are going on that the Black History Organizing Committee wants the community to know about?
So in conjunction with KNME, we'll be doing a film screening at the Kemo on Wednesday the 17th, which is the Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. And there has just been some recent controversy about the Black Panthers. We want people to know the truth. Come out and hear about it and listen to this really great panel, Jean Grant and Dr. Sonia Gibson Rankin from UNM. We have a young, brilliant young man, Fernando Malik Barrios Bradford, is going to be on that panel, and Dr. Jamal Martin at the Kemo. It's at 6:30 on the 17th of February. And then on the 23rd of February at the African American Performing Arts Center, we're doing the Asante Awards. And Asante means thank you in Swahili. And this year, we're thanking Black educators. My mother was a teacher, so I have a special place in my heart for teachers. And we want to thank all the Black educators for the real heavy lifting that they're doing to create a better life for our young people. And there's a speaker, Dr. Umar Johnson, will be talking about the academic achievement gaps and disparities that exist in public school systems at that particular ceremony. There's food also. We always have to have some food. And then our final event of the festival is always New Mexico's Gospel Best Competition, which this year will be at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and First Lady Rosalind Sanders Jones is curating that event again, and we're doing a reunion event this year. So we've been doing it now for 5 years. So people who competed in years prior, who were second and third place winners, are coming back, and we're giving them an opportunity to win that title. Tony Morgan, who is a 2015 New Mexico Gospel Best winner, will be performing, and it's always really a fun time. Gospel music is so great.
I like that idea, the reunion of the performers. So
yeah,
that's really good. Mm-hmm. Now, did you tell, what about your play this time? When is the next
performance?
What?
It has already ended. It was the first weekend is our Arts and Culture Weekend. Normally, it was at the African American Performing Arts Center, and it was really great. If you go on our website at nmblackhistorymonth.com, we'll tease you with some of the pictures of just how great it was. Just from the pictures, you'll see how beautiful that particular offering was. And I'll just say right here on KUNM, you can say you heard it first, that we're going to do it next year. We're going to do it at a larger venue next year, maybe at Pope Joy, if we can get back into Pope Joy, so that more people will have an opportunity to see it in 2017, which I can't even believe I'm saying that, but I just did out loud
well,
on the radio.
Right. Well, you heard the scoop right here on KUNM, and she's going to be back and trying to get at Pope Joy Hall. So hopefully Pope Joy is listening out there. So Kathy McGill, thank you for stopping by. And we're going to go out with one of the songs that we know that you wrote and we love to hear you sing. So let's go out with a Kathy McGill song.
In the morning, and you just cannot sleep. Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's that guy you thought was Mr. McDreamy, who has turned out to be Mr. Nightmare. Or it's the curse your mother put on you when she said, "One day, I hope you grow up and have children who act just like you." And you did. Now, what would I do in that situation? I will tell you what. I call my girlfriend. What would I do without y'all? Who else?